Okay, we've got about 32 minutes together. So what we really want to do is share two ideas with you and maybe use it as an opportunity to frame the summer a little bit for you. And I want to share with you two Meshech Chachmas. So we'll start slow, we'll start easy. Who authored the Meshech Chachma? Excellent. Lanner, no? Okay, Rav Meir Simcha Midvinsk was the author of the Meshech Chachma. He wrote another very, very famous sefer, which is called
Or Sameach.
It's the Lanner. Excellent. Yor Sameach. Which one did he write first?
Or Sameach.
You can't get this answer wrong. He wrote the Meshech Chachma first, but he never published it. When he was younger, he wrote Chidushim on Chumash, called the Meshech Chachma, and he didn't publish those Chidushim because he was told by someone, if you're safer, you're going to come out with this as a safer on Chumash, no one's going to think you're a real Talmud Chacham. Anyone can write a safer on Chumash. To write a safer on Shas, on Gemara, on the Rambam, that already takes broader shoulders. So he didn't publish the safer. He wrote the safer first, he didn't publish it. He published his safer on the Rambam, called the Yosameach, with big, big chidushim. And then he never published the Meshech Chachma in his lifetime. And after he died, that's when the Meshech Chachma was published. But it became the Meshech Chachma is not a sefer on Chumash. It's a sefer on Hashkafa, on Chumash, on Halach. He has tremendous, tremendous insights. I want to share with you two Meshech Chachmas. We'll see if I hope we get to the second one. But they're both very, very profound and very beautiful. We're going to start with the shorter one, the shorter idea. But again, I think it's really perfect as you're starting your summer in Etzes Vakol. And I will right away give you a tremendous, tremendous Yashar Koach, because the idea of spending a high school summer post 11th grade, when you could be doing a lot of other things, to spend your time in a Beis Medrash, to spend your time significant hours of learning, in addition to everything else that goes on here, is quite inspiring. So Ashreichem. Tremendous, tremendous thing. So just again, I was told to kind of keep it light, keep it shavah l'chol nefesh, something that everyone can kind of appreciate. So let's start with the following basic question. When it comes to brachos in general, doraisa or derabbanan? Derabbanan is the correct answer. There are two sets of brachos, which according to many Rishonim are Deoraisa. What are those two brachos that are of biblical origin? Birchas Hamazon, of course, based on the pasuk Achalta Vesavata Verachta. And the second bracha that is a bracha Deoraisa, according to many Rishonim, is Birchas Kohanim. That's a good answer, actually. That's not what I was thinking of. You're right. I'm talking about brachos that are said by everyone. Because Kohanim is only said by Kohanim. Which other set of brachos are Deorais, according to most Rishonim? Birchas Hatov. Birchas Hatov. Birchas Hamazon is what we call a Birchas HaShevach. It's a bracha of thank you, of Shevach V'Hodah. We thank Hashem for the food that He gave us. We thank Him for Eretz Yisrael. We thank Him for the beneficence that He provides for us. And Birchas HaTorah is what kind of bracha?
Machlekes.
Maybe. Yeah, that's fair. But I'm going to call Birchas HaTorah a complex set of brachas. It has an aspect that is, of course, a Birchas HaMitzvah. Asher kitsham zosot zivano laso b'divrei Torah. But it also has an element that is
Shevach.
Shevach. Asher bochar banu mikol ha'am. Yes? Okay. So the Meshech Chachma is bothered by the following. They both have elements of Birchas HaShevach. The Meshech Chachma wants to know the following question. It's a Meshech Chachma, if you want to look it up, Parshas Ekev, on the Psukim of Achalta V'Savato V'Rachta, and the Meshech Chachma asks the following. Why is it that when it comes to the Birchas HaMazon, we make the bracha after we eat? Two brachas d'oraisa, we make the bracha after we eat. When it comes to Birchas HaTorah, we make the bracha, even the bracha of Shevach, Asher bocha abonim kol ha'amim, we make it in the morning before we engage in Talmud Torah. It's the only two brachas d'oraisa, one we make afterwards, one we make before. And he wants to know, what's the basis, why is that? Is the question clear? Now you could answer, right off the bat, we could answer that Birchas Torah has a Birchas Mitzvah element to it. Asher Kitram Zosef Zivanu, and that's why they made the Takana to make the Birchas Torah before the Mitzvah. And you could answer that, and we can go home, we can get to lunch, and all good.
But when
it comes to mitzvahs, when it comes to Shevach V'Hodah, we make the bracha typically afterwards. You see lightning, then you make the bracha. You eat, then you make the bracha. You see a rainbow, then you make the bracha. So when it comes to Birchas HaShevach, we make the bracha afterwards. So Birchas HaTorah has Birchas HaShevach too. So why is the bracha before and not afterwards? Any suggestions? Yeah! I hear your points. You could object to both points. The second point, we do make brachos before we eat. Okay, so you want to say, good, okay, I hear what you say. So you want to say that we need a matir. And Birchas HaTorah is a matir to learn Torah because the Torah is not really, really ours, which is a question, whether the Torah is ours. Perhaps when Hashem gave us the Torah, it very much is ours. It's lo b'shamayim, it is ours. But okay, here, anything else? Yes.
Is it based on intent?
Intent
to do something like being something that you want to, like, more like to study Torah, you're intending to do so, and you're taking that, like, an actual productive action versus, like, after you eat, you're saying thank you for the food that I was given.
Well, why don't I do the same thing by Torah? I learned thank you for the Torah that I was given.
Because it's at a higher level.
Higher level, okay, maybe. Okay, let me share with you the Meshech Chochma's idea. Yeah, go ahead. What?
No end to Torah?
Ooh, that's good. I like that. That's a nice answer. Citing a famous Tosis in Maseches Brachos. Tosis in Brachos asks famously, why do we, when we leave a sukkah, and then we come back to a sukkah, we make a bracha once again. When we leave Torah, we go to play sports, we take a shower, whatever, we don't come back and make Birchas HaTorah again. So Tosis famously answers, is that when it comes to Torah, there is never a Hesach Hadas. We never lose our focus and mindset on Torah. And since we never lose that focus and mindset, we're always, in a certain sense, Osek in Torah. So what's your name?
Akiva.
Akiva says very nicely, you can't make a bracha when you finish learning because you never finish learning. You're always, Torah is always latently on your mind. Excellent answer. Not the Meshech Chochma's answer, but very good. Yeah.
So why do you think you're different?
Because after a long night and a new day, that's what's going to trigger a new Mechayiv. In other words, we're assuming if you have a 7-8 hours sleep at night and you have a new day, that's going to trigger the new Mechayiv. But over the course of a regular day, when you have breaks and not, they're not really breaks. They know that's not called a break.
You had like an 8-hour period during the day.
In theory, if you took a long nap, there's a Rav Akiva Eger that says on the morning of Shavuos, when we have someone else make brachos for us, if you took a nap on Erev Shavuos, technically you could make the Birchas HaTorah because you had that that Hesach Hadas. Okay, but let's say over the Meshech Chochma. So the Meshech Chochma says a fundamental idea, which I think is, again, a beautiful, beautiful idea, something to think about deeply. He says that when it comes to Birchas HaMazon, Birchas HaMazon is a bracha on a physical experience, is a bracha on a Gashmi experience. Torah and the bracha on Torah and the Talmud Torah experience is a spiritual ruchnius experience. And he says there's a fundamental difference in our approach. Has anyone ever gone or heard of papagayos? Just raise your hand if you've never heard of it. Okay, a few of you have never heard of it. Papagayos is a well-known restaurant in Yerushalayim, and it is known for its all-you-can-eat gastronomic indulgent experience. And basically, if you have an arrangement to go to Papagayos, what you typically will do is you will not eat breakfast or lunch. You'll position yourself perfectly to get your absolute money's worth. And there's all strategies in how to go about it. You don't want to wash. because then you're going to waste space on bread and other sides, and you want to focus on the basar, and that's the Papa Guy's experience. Now you're hungry, you're looking forward, you're sitting down, and they start to bring out the steaks. And as they start to bring out the steaks, what is happening to you? You are starting to salivate, you're imbibing the fragrances that are in the atmosphere, and you're very, very excited. In your mind, you are saying to yourself, this is going to be nothing short of awesome. And you start, and you eat, and you become full. And what do you do after you become full? You eat, and you continue eating, and you continue eating, because after all, 180 shek, 210 shek, whatever it costs, you want to make sure you're getting your money's worth. And after 3 hours of engorgement, mamish achila gasa, you're done. You're finally done. You're schwitzing. You're stuffed. Beyond stuffed. How do you feel right now? The answer is you feel horrible. You don't feel good. You feel disgusting is what you feel. You feel no sense of like, this was awesome. I feel like sick. I can't wait to like somehow get rid of this feeling. Are you in the mood to say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, thank you so much for this wonderful Suda? You're not in the mood. So says the Meshech Chachma, when it comes to experiences of Gashmis, the anticipation, this is going to be awesome. Thank you, Hashem, for like what I'm about to experience. That's coming natural. That's natural. And therefore, the Torah did not need to be mechayev, a bracha before the experience. Afterwards is a very common phenomena of what I'll call, with the Meshech Chachma cites a pasuk, Vayishman Yeshurun Vayiv'at. That you become fat and you kick it away. It wasn't so good. I'm not feeling so good. I'm not feeling that sense of gratitude. That's where Hashem says, stop. And nevertheless, you might not be naturally feeling it. Make a bracha. Make the bracha now. That's when the Torah has to mechayev the bracha. That's when it comes to physical experiences. When it comes to spiritual experiences, limud haTorah, it's more often than not, very often, the exact opposite. Sunday morning, you're going to have to get up for minyan. Tomorrow, you get up for minyan. Sunday morning, you get up for Seder. And after perhaps not being rested enough on a Motzei Shabbos, because you took a nice Shabbos afternoon nap, you're going to be tired. You're not going to be feeling it. You're going to get up on a Sunday morning, and you're going to be saying to yourself, or you might be saying to yourself, I'm not really down for this. I'm not really in the mood right now. I'm not really feeling this. But you push through, because that's the type of guys you are. And you do it. And all of a sudden, you had a great Seder with your Chavrusa. And all of a sudden, you walked into Shir, and your Rebbe gave some razzle-dazzle mahalach, and you walked out and says, whoa, that was unbelievable. That was awesome. See, when it comes to spiritual experiences, ruchnis, more often than not, before you engage, you're not always in the mood. Whether it's for davening, whether it's for learning, whatever it might be. It's too abstract. It's a little more sublime. But once you have it, and once you did it, then all of a sudden, wow, that was great. I had a great Seder. That was a great shiur. I feel connected. So once again, says the Meshech Chachma, the Torah has to flip it on us. When do we need that bracha to put us in that right mindset to connect this and connect myself to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? It's before this experience. It's before the limud that I need that bracha. Afterwards, I'm feeling connected. I feel that connection, and therefore there's no need for the mechayev of the bracha afterwards. And as we embark and we think about this summer, I promise you, there'll be those mornings, those evenings, where you're not feeling it. But if, nevertheless, you overcome, you have that bracha mindset in your head, so all of a sudden you'll you'll have that natural sense of kirbas elokim, of that connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the fundamental difference between the Gashmi experience and the Ruchni experience. This is the idea of the Meshech Chachma, idea number one in Parshas 8. Okay? Good? Got it? Idea number two. This is a Meshech Chachma on the Shira. Parshas B'Shalach, again, I think it has a lot of relevance to us here as well, especially for post-11th graders. Because post-10th graders, how many of you were on call last summer? Okay, so a lot of Shana Betters. And even if you weren't, Shana, you know, the post-10th, it's like, it's what you do. You spend the summer in Eretz Yisrael, you come to call. Post-11th is not, as you see in the numbers, it's not necessarily what you do. So in a certain sense, those of you that chose to come post-11th, or even post-12th, you're making a move. You're making a statement. It's a bigger move in a certain sense. So the Meshech Chachma has the following kasha. It's a medrash. The medrash asks, Jews came out of Mitzrayim. They're crossing the Yamsuf. And the Mitzrayim are chasing them as they cross the Yamsuf. The Yam splits for the Jews, they cross, the Mitzrayim enter, and the Mitzrayim perish. And the Meshech Chachma asks, at this time, there was the Satan, actually the Meshech Chachma, before the Meshech Chachma asks, the Satan, the Medrash cites a famous Medrash and says, I don't understand Hashem what you're doing over here. The Jews are being saved, the Mitzrayim are dying. Why? Halalu ov de avodah zarah, the halalu ov de avodah zarah. Why are you saving the Jews, letting the Mitzrayim die? After all, the Jews had sunk to Mentesh Shari Tumah. So they too are not deserving of salvation. If you're killing the Mitzrayim, why are the Jews being saved? And the Medrash gives a very, very fascinating answer, an important answer. That's a different Medrash. The Medrash gives an answer. I'll tell you what the answer is. The Medrash gives. Hashem says to the Satan, Shota Shaba'ola, you're a fool to think you can compare B'nai Yisrael to them. It's true. They were both B'mentes Shari Tuma. That's true. But B'nai Yisrael were B'mentes Shari Tuma from a state of impoverishment, from a state of 210 years of slavery. So yes, guilty. But guilty with an excuse. The Mitzrayim were also Ovei Avodah Zarah, Mentes Shari Tumah, but it was from a state of power. It was from a state of wealth. It was from a state of control. And that is guilty without an excuse. In a certain sense, I wasn't going to talk about this, but just a two-minute Musar Haskel, is that there are a lot of nisyonos in life. There's a nisyon of poverty, there's a nisyon of wealth. There's a nisayon of weakness, there's a nisayon of strength. These are all nisyonos. But the nisayon that perhaps we're going to be more taken to task for is a nisayon of wealth. And today, the world we live in, Jews are faring financially, freedom-wise, persecution-wise, better than ever before. And that's a nisayon for us that, in a certain sense, if we fall then, like, what's our excuse? What's our excuse? Okay, but that's a side note. The Meshech Chachma now asks the following question. The Satan woke up at Kriyas Yamsuf. Jews are being saved, Mitzrayim are perishing. Why is the question being asked now? For the past 11 months, we've been in Mitzrayim, Eser Makos, Mitzrayim are getting slammed, and the Jews are being saved. So where was the Satan for the past 11 months? There was no medrash like this. It's only by Kriyas Yamsuf. So why now is the Satan asking the question? And why was he not asking the question throughout the duration of Eser Makos? That's the question that's being asked by the Meshech Chachma. And he introduces a powerful idea. And something to think about. He says, we stand as Jews in two modalities. We stand sometimes as individuals and sometimes as being part of a tzibur. And we're judged in both ways, as yechidim, individuals, and as being part of a tzibur. When we're being judged as individuals, let's think about it a little bit. You take a match on Shabbos and you strike it. What's your punishment for that? Kares, and if they're Adim, Hasra, Skil. Now, just think about it for a second. I needed to see something. I struck a match on Shabbos. I know Shabbos is big, but like, is it such a big deal? I struck a match on Shabbos. I kept everything else. No, that's a chiv kares. It's pretty, if you think about it, it's pretty radical. I eat a fig, a little amount, on Yom Kippur. Terrible. What's my punishment? Once again, a chiv kares. I steal. That's my punishment for stealing. Kares? Misa? Lashes? Nope. I got to give it back. Pay kefel. There's a knas. There's a fine. I'm good to go. It's striking, and I don't want to talk about it now, but if you think about the avera of rape and the response of the Torah, it's relatively light compared to what you would expect. Striking a match on Shabbos, skila kares. Gezel gneva, yeah, just pay it back, pay a knas. Striking. The Meshech Chachma says, an individual's primary relationship as an individual is him and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and as such, Averos Bein Adam LaMakom are going to be, if you will, more strictly responded to in Beis Din than Averos Bein Adam LaMakom by an individual. What's the avera for? What's the onus for lashon hara? Rechilus. These are big averas, but it's relatively light, if you will, relatively light compared to ben adam amakom, because our individual relationship ben adam amakom is primary, and that's the Torah's response via the onus. But let's take a look at when a tzibur does averas. Says the Meshech Chachma, you find the exact opposite phenomenon. Let's compare different communities. So the Dor HaMabul was a tzibur. They did a lot of averes. But what was the clinching aver? What was the aver that broke, the straw that broke the camel's back? Gezer. Steal. And what was the punishment of the Dor HaMabul? The whole world was destroyed. So the Aver was Gezel, and the entire world gets destroyed. A couple of generations later, you have the Dor HaPalaga, the tower above it. They built a tower. Their mission was a tzibur to rebel against Hashem. A tzibur doing an Aver bein Adam LaMakom. And what's the response? The response was dispersion, new languages, but certainly not destruction. Strikingly different. Let's flash forward a couple of thousand years. The Churban Bayis Sheni, tzibur during Averos. What was the clinching Aver, the Churban Bayis Sheni? Sinas Chinam. A tzibur during Averos, Bein Adam, L'Chavera. We're still suffering that Avera and that Onish. Contrasted with the Bayis Rishon, which was primarily Averas Ben Adam HaMakom. So now you're talking about a 70-year Golus. Something very different. And the Meshech Chachma brings many, many proofs to this idea. Egel Hazav Ben Adam HaMakom, Tzibur. And we got a Kapara. At the end of the day, Hashem forgive us. So why is it? Why is that? So he suggests that when it comes to a tzibur, two ideas. Number one is that tzibur is ikar avoda. Is an avoda ben ad mechaver. Is to maintain themselves as a tzibur for a lot of different reasons. One reason is because the power of a tzibur is incomprehensible. What can be accomplished by 10 individuals working individually is radically different than what can be accomplished by 10 people working together as a tzibur. And when a tzibur starts to fractionalize and starts to engage in averes ben chavero, lashon hara, gezel, whatever it might be, it starts to dissipate its koach of tzibur, it loses its essence. It loses what it's all about. It loses any koach it has to accomplish. And that's exactly what was lost by the Dor HaMabul and the Dor HaFlaga, rebelling against Hashem. But we're told that they were united in that rebellion. And that unity in that rebellion is already something meaningful. We should be, we're not united in good things, not bad things. But that's a tremendous, tremendous power. So says the Meshech Chachma, back to your Medrash now. When Bnei Yisrael was in Mitzrayim, why was there no problem? No problem of the Satan saying, why are you saving the Jews and not saving the Mitzrayim? So the answer is because in Mitzrayim, Lo Shinu Es Malbusham, Lo Shinu Es Lashonam, Lo Shinu Es Shmam, they maintained, they had, the Medrash also says they didn't speak Lashon Hara. There was a unity amongst the Jewish people. They were together in Mitzrayim. And therefore, there was a fundamental difference. You can't compare Mitzrayim to Bnei Yisrael. When they got out, they got to Kriyas Yamsuf, Chazal tell us. Some wanted to go to the right, some wanted to go to the left, some wanted to fight, some wanted to go back to Mitzrayim, some wanted to go forward into the Yam. But they started to break up. They started to become Am Mefurad Umefuza. They became disjointed, fractionalized, and fractured. And as a result, now the Satan can jump in. When you're part of a tzibur, and this tzibur that I'm speaking to is a very, very special and chashuv tzibur, for the choice that you made to be here, and for what you're going to accomplish over the next 5.5-6 weeks, a very chashuv tzibur. And it will allow you, if you work as a tzibur, if you achieve as a tzibur, if you're invested with each other as a tzibur, it'll allow you to achieve things that you could never, ever achieve as individuals. It will also, by the way, enable you to camouflage some of your, we all have faults, when you're part of a chashuv tzibur. So I'm no longer just a yachid, even klapei Hashem, I'm part of this bigger thing. And therefore my flaws, which we all have as well, can get camouflaged. And I'll illustrate that with a somewhat comical story. And with that I will close. I many years ago went to a law school. And in law school, I was in a school, there were about 360 or so first year law students. And they divide us into three sections, 120 in each section, and you're in class every single day with 120 other students. And you do your thing, study, do whatever you do, and then comes exam time. Now, the professors in law school are very chashuv people, and they don't want to waste their time dealing with proctoring tests. So the law school hired proctors to proctor the tests. Usually retirees that lived in the neighborhood, and they would be hired to proctor tests, these 65, 70, 75-year-old men and women. And this was like their glory moments. They come in, remember it vividly, and they'd read the announcements, the rules of the test. The test is going to last 4 hours. I'm going to call out the time every hour, and the last half hour, I'm going to call it out every 10 minutes. But when I say pencils down, pencils down. Okay? And if your pencil is not down, you fail. Wow. Tough stuff. So, We take our exam. Constitutional law. 4-hour test. 3 hours left, 2 hours left, 1 hour left. By 1 hour left, about 60 of the 120 already finished. 30 minutes left, there are 30 people still taking the test. 20, 10, there are 8 people taking the test. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and everyone comes forward to bring in their test. And there is that one guy. Keeps writing. Proctor collects all the tests, keeps writing. 10 minutes over, 15 minutes over, finally that guy steps up, innocently, sheepishly comes up and says, I want to give in my test. And the proctor said, did you hear my announcements? He said, I did. Did you hear me say pencils down? Time is up. I did. So you fail. And the student says, do you have any idea what my last name is? The proctor says, I have no idea. You don't know my name? I couldn't care less if your name was Rockefeller. It was Kennedy. You gave in a test late. You fail. You have no idea who I am? No idea. And the student takes his exam, puts it in the middle of the stack, and runs out of the room. That, my friends, is another koach and power of the tzibur. Because when you're part of a tzibur, we all have flaws. We all have our late exam. Something that we messed up. But if I'm in a shul, and I might not be the biggest baal tzedak, but there's a big baal tzedak in that shul. And I'm not the biggest masmid in the world. But in that base medrash, there's an unbelievable masmid. And I might have my imperfections. But I'm part of a tzibur that has the baal tzedak, that has the baal chesed, has the masnid, has the tzaddik who doesn't say word of lashon hara, and I'm part of that. So I might have my pimples, my flaws, my warts, but nevertheless, I'm part of this incredible, incredible tzibur. And all of a sudden, I'm dragged, I'm picked up, I'm elevated by them. So I want to give us all a bracha as we begin our summer. Is that number one? We should never, ever, ever have those mornings where we're not feeling it. But if we ever do, which we might, so to push yourself, invest yourself, lean into it, and have yourself a good Seder, have yourself a great Shir, and you'll walk away feeling that sense of geschmack, that sense of, yeah, that was awesome. I might not have been feeling it in the beginning, but now that was great. And at the same time, link in. You are an incredible Seaboard. Lean into this tzibur, appreciate this tzibur, because it will enable you to accomplish so much more than you can accomplish as an individual. Have an excellent day and an excellent Shabbos Kiddush.